105.9 Academy FM.
BizConnect.
Promoting and connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Tweet us at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the BizConnect radio show. As always, we've got two super guests in the studio today. We're going to be talking to our first guest, Graham Risby, shortly after the break, all about peer-to-peer networks and people-to-people networks and everything that he's up to in that space with his organisation, Hirecar. And we're going to also be talking with Tim Aker from the FSB. Tim is the development manager for the FSB in Kent and Medway. And Tim's going to be bringing us all up to date with everything that's going on an FSB front as well. So, gentlemen, welcome to the show. Lovely to have you with us today.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Martin.
Tim, great to have you with us as well to talk about the FSB in the second half of the show. I think what we'll do for now is we'll play a little bit of music, and when we come back, as I say, we're going to have a chat with Graham, and we're going to learn more about Hirecar. So join us after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect.
The show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the BizConnect radio show, everyone. As I was saying before the break, we've got two super guests in the studio with us today. We have Tim Aker, who is the development manager, Kent and Medway, for the FSB, Federation of Small Businesses. And we also have Graham Risby, who is the CEO of Hirecar. Graham, lovely to have you in the studio today.
Great to be here.
Graham, just by way of an introduction, tell us a little bit about Hirecar. The name would imply it's some kind of car rental business, but I, from a personal point of view, I have to say it's an incredibly exciting and innovative company, and it's a lot more than just a car hire company. So do tell us in your own words a little bit about what you guys do, please.
Sure. So, yeah, I can't take any credit for the name, actually. That's my co-founder. I can't that name, although I pretend that I do. But yeah, essentially, we have a platform that allows car owners to share their cars to their neighbours when they're not being used. So one of the analogies we get is Airbnb for cars. And yeah, we've been trading for nearly 7 years, and it's just a great way to eliminate waste, you know, get those cars shared, and to help out your neighbours when they need a car.
Mm-hmm. So, how does it actually work in practice? You know, let's say I'm interested in using this kind of locally as a resource to tap into. I need a car for a couple of hours or perhaps half a day. How do I actually kind of make use of your service?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, we spent a lot of time on this to make it as easy, but also lots of different layers of verification and secure. So, first thing you would do as a driver is download our app, iOS or Android. You can also go onto the website, so it's hirecar.co.uk. And I think the real beauty is that as a driver, the app kind of walks you through the process, and within minutes, you can be signed up for free to use our platform.
Mm-hmm.
The really cool stuff that goes on behind the scenes and what we've been spending millions of pounds and lots of years developing is that we have lots of layers of verification, because we need to make sure that, you know, we're doing the best for our owner partners, and security is just so important in our industry. So for you as the customer, it'll literally be within an instant, but behind the scenes we'll be able to check your driving history. There's 34 different layers of verification, so I won't list them all out. But no, super quick, and there's not any kind of fees to sign up. You kind of pay as you play.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you've been going for 7 years, and you mentioned that you've invested millions of pounds into this business. So how did the journey start, Graham? I mean, you know, was it an idea that you and your co-founder just had one day over a cup of coffee in the office? How did it all come about? And how did you get the money that you needed to kind of invest in all of that kind of, you know, back-end work as you've just been describing?
So I think as a person, really, I've always been quite curious, and I've always worked up in, had worked up in London. So when I was, and then I suppose one of my biggest loves were vehicles. So it kind of felt natural that getting the train to London every day, seeing cars sitting idle, cars actually cost money to buy, and just, you know, you sell them 2 or 3 years later for half the price. Mm. Kind of thinking, this just doesn't seem right. So the idea really was kind of born from, I suppose, that frustration or just kind of curiousness to why is there not a better solution? And then also on the other side of the coin, you know, when you went to actually hire a car, it was just such an awful process. There'd always be fines and, you know, that these companies weren't open at the weekends and whatnot. Mm. My unfair advantage is that my wife is in insurance. So I know we'll come on to that at some point, but yeah, she really helps out with the insurance. But yeah, I bumped into my co-founder locally and said, hey, I've got this idea. You know, what do you think? And his background, I've known him since, you know, I was 15, 16, was in marketplaces. And he said, you know what, I actually really like the sound of this, so let's try and do it together. Mm. And I think that's really when, yeah, things started happening, was when, you know, both of us started to really look into this and try and create a solution.
Yeah. So in terms of, you know, getting the money together to launch, you know, it's not like, I don't know, you're a sole trader, for example, that needed, you know, tools and a van. I'm assuming that you know, most of the upfront cost was kind of investing in, you know, creating the back end as you've described, to make it all work. So, you know, that's not cheap, is it, ultimately?
No, it's not. And yeah, obviously back in the early days, we basically needed some seed investment so we can develop the technology. Mm. As soon as we got the insurance, or the nod for the insurance, which was kind of a UK's first, we went to market basically to raid our seed round. Mm-hmm. And it was incredible. I think our pre-valuation was £950,000 and we were raising £150,000. Supposed to raise, we were a £1 million company. And, you know, it was all really the idea and the insurance.
So that was a crowdfunding exercise that you did in the first instance?
Correct. We had seeders. And, yeah, it was fascinating because we actually, after 5 days, we actually stopped the raise because we had overfunded to £300,000.
Amazing.
And at the time, it was the first time I'd ever seen a company that quickly raise that kind of cash.
Yeah.
And for us, we just developed that into the technology, into the platform. And we've been doing it, you know, ever since, really, to be honest. But and it was just, it was just then, it was proving that there was really a marketplace for this. Mm. You know, our assumption was there's 32 million cars sit idle most of the time. Mm. So it's a great way for people to make some money when it's sitting idle.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise, there were billions of journeys made by car over 1 hour. In the UK at the time, so the demand's always kind of been there.
Mm. So you mentioned insurance, and that was obviously a sort of a major sticking point for you in terms of a hurdle that needed to be overcome. And I'm assuming that's because I can, as well as being able to hire someone else's car and that vehicle be insured, somebody has to put their car physically on your website to be able to, for me to then be able to hire it as well. So, you know, insurance was quite a kind of a key sticking point then, presumably.
Yeah, it's the hire and reward side for the owner.
Mm.
So it's great for us for stickiness with regards to you need our platform to be able to rent out your car and make money. But the sales pitch was quite a challenge because even if we had owned the vehicles ourselves, still wasn't, you know, it's just Graham and Rob rocking up saying, hey, we've got this company and we want to be a car hire company, if that's what it was, would be a challenge. But we added into the mix, actually, you know what, we're not even going to own these cars. These are individuals renting out their own cars. We were lucky. We had the guys at Aon working with us and we managed to get AXA to underwrite the policy. And ever since then, really, we've just had a real focus on what we're doing is extremely sustainable. We have to build this the right way. It's all around trust. There's no silver bullets. Mm. You know, there were companies over here that have been and gone that tried doing the same as us but didn't really care about the verification side too much.
Mm.
And it's worked out well.
So there is real peace of mind then on the, you know, the part of the business, the car owner that's put their vehicle on your website, you know, they're kind of cherished you know, golf hatchback or whatever it might be. There is real peace of mind that, you know, A, people generally, in your experience, tend to look after these vehicles better than they would a hire car because they know it's perhaps a neighbour's vehicle or somebody in their locality. But B, in the eventuality that something should happen, there is, you know, fully comprehensive insurance that will, you know, rectify the problem, as it were.
Yeah, correct. I still think we don't really, obviously you're talking about like sharing the value. I think we do, yeah, it's without the platform, you know, owners can't do this. It's complete kind of risk-free in that sense. If anything happens, our insurance does pay out. Again, we, you know, touch wood, we've been really, I wouldn't say lucky because we've put a lot of time into this, but you know, we have things like facial recognition when people pick up the car so you know it's the right person. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the insurance is just huge peace of mind. It's the first question still that any owner asks, and rightly so. And yeah, it's one of the big enablers.
Brilliant. Fantastic. I think what we'll do is we'll leave it there for the minute, Graham. When we come back, I'd like to understand a little bit more of the kind of the detail behind here, and also the car club concept that you guys have launched as well, perhaps with local authorities. Yep. I know you've got one in Faversham, for example. And also, you know, the kind of the practical application for businesses moving forward, because I know that's the market you're getting into. And really where you see the kind of the future of these peer-to-peer networks and people-to-people networks, because I think that's an incredibly exciting space to be in. So do stay with us, and we're going to play a little bit of music. When we come back, we'll talk some more with Graham. So join us after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the Biz Connect radio show, everybody. We've spent the last 10 minutes talking with Graham Risby from his company Hire Car about peer-to-peer or people-to-people networks and how his business model works in the marketplace. Graham, absolutely fascinating business, enabling consumers, for example, that have a car perhaps sitting on their driveway doing nothing, to commercialise that, if you like, for want of a better word, and actually you know, sell that to someone else locally for a couple of hours or half a day, whatever it might be, for them to use. And we were talking about the insurance as being a kind of a key component in that, but also, you know, you were talking about things like facial recognition and checks, which again give the business owner peace of mind, total peace of mind. I think it's fair to say that the person that turns up on their driveway is actually the person that they believe is hiring their car. So all of that obviously is where you've spent your money in terms of developing the platform and everything else. But you're obviously expanding now fairly rapidly as a business, not only in terms of the number of cars that are registered on your website, for example, but I know you're working with local authorities now as well to roll out your own vehicles in the form of car clubs, for example. So just tell us a little bit about how that works, Graham.
Yeah, we've kind of got a few variations, but I think fundamentally what we could see is that there was always a lot of demand for vehicles, so people wanting access to a car, but actually it's not always been easy to try and get owners to share their car. You're not going to see us on a Facebook ad and be like, oh, that's a great idea. You know, it's quite a personal thing. Obviously, cars were worth a lot of money to people. So Faversham, you know, my co-founder Rob and I are both from Kent, both from Maidstone. And to work with Faversham was really interesting because basically they reached out and said, look, as a council, we want to promote car sharing. Fantastic. Every council should. And but actually, you know, can we use your managed cars? So we do, you know, we manage a pool of cars, so we don't own any, but for an OEM or some fleet owners. So we said, yeah, we can look at this. Mm. And the fascinating thing with Faversham is when we first started working with the council, I think there was something like 3 people signed up, not any car owners. Now, 6 months in, there are 150 drivers that are repeat using those 3 vehicles. The vehicles are getting utilised pretty much the whole month. And what is really cool, and this is what we love with like the car club side of our business, is that owners, when they realise, actually, I can be putting my car into the mix, it's a great way for local people to share their cars. So yeah, I think kudos to Swell and Faversham Council. We're now talking to other councils in Kent, and we have other partnerships across the UK live. And
so yeah. These are, in this instance, these are electric vehicles, is that right? And they are actually hire car branded, so you do actually have a sort of a branding presence on the vehicles, as it were. And are they sort of collected from a central depot? How does that work, as opposed to someone's driveway?
Yeah, so the cars, a few questions there. So they're not all electric. We're hoping to get over to electric, but they're just so scarce at the moment. The cars are really hard to get hold of. So, and also the charge, they had a bit of a problem with the charging point, but there is an electric car due to go in before the year, I think actually next week. But there were hybrids there as well. So yeah, the cars are, there's three cars located in their main car park in Faversham. They're available for their own staff to use, but also for the public to use. So you, yeah, want to get more electric in. I can't remember the other part of the...
Yeah, I was just wondering how it works in terms of, you know, does it work through the website again, for example? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, people can see those cars on the open market.
Yeah.
It gets confusing because sometimes people, you know, councils, organisations, or even communities, actually, they prefer to share their cars on a closed market. So only people within that geo area can see the vehicles. So if I was searching, for example, I wouldn't be able to see these. But no, these cars, like I say, all got the hire car livery on.
Yeah.
We actually have a lot of our peer-to-peer owners that have these stickers on as well.
Oh, right, okay.
Because a third of our kind of sign-ups come from seeing those vehicles. So people know, yeah, download the app. And again, the beautiful thing in Faversham is that you can see a car there, you can sign up in minutes, and literally be in that car with the keyless entry 10 minutes later.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay. We haven't spoken about keyless entry, so we should mention that briefly. So this is another, you know, big part of the development process that you've gone through to enable some kind of smart box to be located within one of your customer vehicles that enables somebody else to just turn up and through their iPhone or their smartphone, basically access the vehicle, start it and drive off.
Yeah, correct. I'm conscious of the time. I could talk about this for ages. But what we could see in the early days is that drivers were requesting the car, but owner would be at work. And it was quite frustrating for the driver and also frustrating for the owner because they want to say yes, but they're like, well, I can't be there, so the key handover. Yeah. So we, it's actually the only part, the IP is actually with Continental. It's the only bit we actually is anything else in-house at hire car. But 2017, we started working with them. To bring this keyless solution to market, which essentially means the owner doesn't have to be there to do the key handover. 90% of our bookings now are all via this keyless device. Mm-hmm. And the first car, it was UK's first, it was a bronze Fiesta. And my daughter, who's now 10, she was 5 at the time, I can remember showing her how this technology works. So I opened up the car and she was like, oh, it's like a supercar. And I was like, it is. It turns every car into this supercar. And it's just a huge enabler. And it's really secure as well. There's no live key in there, so it doesn't affect your personal insurance. And it really works. So yeah, it's a massive part of our business.
And I know you're also, as well as working with local authorities, you're also looking at the kind of the business application now for hire car as well. And not just businesses, but also, you know, organisations like the NHS, for example, that have a requirement for, vehicles that their carers, for example, can go out into the community and utilise for that purpose. So there's an application there as well.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I think fundamentally where we started helping people share their own cars, we had to make sure it worked. And then what we found is actually managing our own cars, you know, on behalf of someone's now become quite easy because of technology, which has led to this kind of third solution really, which I think is just really exciting and it can really help people share cars and get cars off the road in bulk, is this booking platform solution, as it be. So for hire car, we don't really want to get involved in the cars. So some of the councils we work with, we will provide 6 cars from one of our partners like AAM. But you know, that's not, we'd rather focus on the technology. So what's quite cool now is that the press is going to go out on this in the next few weeks, so I can't say the name, but I can talk about it, is NHS Trust, where they've got 600 cars. And essentially what they're doing is just putting our booking platform into those, you know, our technology into those cars. We're giving them all the back-end sides. So all the staff will download our app on their work phone, which has been quite interesting getting that signed off, but that's all done. So when a NHS a staff member needs to go and visit somebody at their home, 24/7, they'll be using the Hirecar app in those cars. And what's fantastic for the business, it doesn't matter if it's private or public sector, is that they can save a lot of money and waste just through the utilisation of using our technology and the insights we can give that to actually reduce the cars that are just sitting idle.
Possibly reduce their fleet. I mean,
exactly.
If it's being underutilised.
We're pretty confident from the work we've been doing for over a year now that we can go into any fleet manager and decrease their fleet by at least 30%. And also our solution, because there are solutions out there, I won't name them, but they're essentially built by non-tech companies, so they don't really work and they're super expensive. So, you know, some of the telematics boxes that people pay cost £30 or £40 a month. Well, our technology is pretty much the same, and it gives you that plus also all the other benefits.
Good. So, I mean, just to finish, because as you say, we are sadly running out of time, but where do you see the kind of future of peer-to-peer and people-to-people networks? And you know, obviously technology is a key enabler here. Where else do you see this perhaps being applied in the future, Graham? Give us your crystal ball prediction.
I just think, that's a good question. I just think you're going to see more and more of it. So we, obviously, we're quite lucky that we're in amongst all this. So we see different kind of solutions. You know, there's parking apps where your driveway's idle, you can share.
I've used that myself, yeah.
Really good for the customer, and also for the, you know, I've got an electric car, so I can share out my drive with the electric point. The guys at Olio do food sharing. So again, just basically you're seeing, you're seeing these marketplaces kind of, just solving huge problems and just enabling people to do whatever it is to help others in their community. And I think it's only just started. And I think with all of the downside, obviously, at the moment in the economy and what's going on, I think you're just going to see more and more people using platforms to either make or save money.
Yeah, if you've got an asset that you can commercialise through a platform like yours, why wouldn't you? Yeah,
exactly that.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Graham, it's been fascinating to have you on the show with us today. Do stay with us. We're going to play a little bit of music. When we come back, we're going to have a chat with Tim Aker, who is the development manager for the FSB in Kent and Medway. So do stay with us. We'll be straight back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back, everybody, to the second part of the BizConnect radio show today with myself, Martin White. We've been talking with Graham Risby, who is CEO of Hirecar, peer-to-peer company. Graham, we didn't give a shout-out for your website, by the way. Is it hirecar.co.uk?
It is, that's right, yeah, but H-I-Y-A.
H-I-Y-A-car.co.uk, brilliant. But I think what we'd like to do now is talk to our second guest on the show today, and that is Tim Aker, who is the Development Manager for the Federation of Small Businesses in Kent and Medway. Tim, always lovely to have you on the show.
Pleasure, thank you.
I think it's fair to say, quite a lot happening in kind of political circles recently, and obviously the Federation of Small Businesses are there to kind of keep everybody up to date in terms of what that means for small businesses. But by way of an introduction, do tell us a little bit about what the FSB does and what you guys are all about, please.
Well, I've started thinking of the Federation of Small Businesses as the trade union for small businesses. We provide lots of services for our members, we provide a lobbying, and we provide a network for businesses to meet other businesses and expand their contact book. On the service side, we provide a hell of a lot of value for our members. Every single conceivable legal document you could think of, over 1,200. The 24/7 legal helpline, HR support. We've added FSB Care, which provides physiotherapy and mental health support for our members. Huge. And we're adding to it time and time again. So go to fsb.org.uk, see our whole range of member benefits. Absolute tremendous value. It starts from £177 a year, the cheapest around, with the biggest value, biggest range of services. We also have the lobbying arm of our organisation, and that's done at a county level with myself and also at a national level in Westminster. And we've had some big wins this year. The employment allowance was extended from £4,000 to £5,000 to aid businesses that employ people. And we finally got the reversal of the national insurance increase, which was adding to the tax burden of many, many small businesses. Mm. So we're very successful there at a local level. We've been engaging with lots of local authorities, creating support networks, bridging the gap between local authorities and small businesses so that if businesses do need the support, they have the contacts there within the local authorities. So we're doing lots. But as you said in your introduction, Martin, lots has changed, but also very little has changed. As you may have read, we've released our small business index for the third quarter of this year.
Yeah.
Business confidence levels are still incredibly low. And the previous quarter showed confidence levels where they were during lockdown. But if you separate confidence from actual responses to individual questions, it paints a very different picture. If you thought the confidence levels were as low as they were in lockdown when the economy was hanging by a thread, you'd expect employment levels to be plummeting. Well, they're not. Three quarters of businesses say they don't plan to change their employment levels, and those that plan to grow are exact similar number to those that plan to decrease. Similar on wage growth. Majority of businesses plan to increase wages, although that's set within a context of 11% inflation. So there are pros, there are negatives, and we look to dig down into the data, because when you're dealing with a county as diverse as Kent that's got some real poverty in certain places and real affluence, we need to dig down and find from the businesses on the ground what their experiences are, what they'd like to see. And a lot of them are finding it very, very difficult with the cost of doing business, finding the right skills, the right members of staff, and actually wanting a government that supports them, because small businesses are the backbone of the British economy, and they're being squeezed and squeezed and squeezed. And not it's very, very difficult, a very resilient bunch, but for a lot of them, you know, that cliff edge is coming.
Well, we'll talk about, you know, the autumn statement, perhaps in the next bit of the show. But you're absolutely right. I think you've highlighted that there are some sectors of the economy that are actually doing incredibly well. And I'm just thinking back to last week. I was down at Discovery Park looking at their new Barclays Eagle Lab, which is kind of co-working space, but also looking at Discovery Park's own new laboratory space for, you know, micro life science business startups, for example. And again, you know, that whole life sciences sector is one that's incredibly buoyant at the moment and really kind of driving the economy forward. And, you know, we were talking to Graham about, you know, his business in terms of how they've harnessed technology and built a platform and the opportunities that affords. So it's important. And I think construction as well, you know, in Kent has been, you know, booming, you know, over the last sort of 10 years or so, and renewables, you know, I work with businesses in that space day to day, you know, solar PV companies, organizations like that, and again their business is really kind of forging ahead. So again, I think, you know, going back to what you were saying, it's important to remember that you know, there are sectors of the economy whose time is very much now, and there are perhaps more traditional sectors of the economy that are clearly, you know, really struggling, and that's where the kind of support's needed, Tim. Oh, I guess
absolutely, and you know, we're sat in this studio with an incredible innovator. I mean, to hear Hyacar going from strength to strength, it's a fantastic innovation, and this is one thing that is so wonderful about capitalism, is that even in a crisis, there is room for innovation.
Yeah,
and in the bad times, the entrepreneurs, the philanthropists find the problems and think of the solutions, and then that generates new businesses, new ideas, new ventures. So we can all be doom mongers and listen to the activist press and sit in our homes moaning about everything, or go and hide with our fingers in our ears and our eyes shut waiting for everything to get better, or people can actually go out there and do something about it. And it's the doers that get this country through the economic bad times, and it's a privilege to actually be sat with one of them, because people got to realize that there is a dynamic economy out there. The advances of technology, as you've said, with renewable energy, Martin, let's not forget the big breakthroughs in hydrogen research in Herne Bay. There's lots to be optimistic about. but we are spoon-fed so much bad news. You can't avoid it. And this brings me back to the point about the business index. You separate the confidence level, which is a subjective feeling, from the actual answers to the questions about employment, wage growth, and investment intentions, and it tells two completely different stories.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. Okay. Well, look, Tim, I think what we'll do is we'll play a little bit of music. When I come back, I'd like to kind of address some of the things that were in the Chancellor's autumn statement, specifically, if we can, and talk about what you guys are up to at the FSB, Federation of Small Businesses, in terms of lobbying government for kind of business help moving forwards, and where you see the kind of priorities in that space. Do stay with us. We're going to play a little bit of music, and when we come back, we'll close the show with another conversation with Tim all around that. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this.
Academy FM Folkestone.
Biz Connect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.
Welcome back to the final part of the Biz Connect radio show today. We've had a really exciting conversation all round, I think, in terms of talking with Graham Risby about his incredibly innovative, technology-driven hire car solution. We've brought things back down to reality a little bit. I think it's fair to say in the last bit of the show, we're talking with Tim Aker from the Federation of Small Businesses around what's going on in the economy at the moment, and what the FSB are essentially up to as a lobbying organisation. Tim, I'd like to sort of come back to you if we can. You were talking before the break about some of the key benefits of FSB membership, and one of those benefits, I think it's fair to say, and that's kind of coming into its own at the moment, is this late payment assistance that the FSB can offer businesses at the moment. So I think, I think it's fair to say that, when businesses are struggling, debtor days tend to kind of increase in organisations. So what is it the FSB can actually offer in that space, Tim?
Well, we offer, as part of membership, a debt recovery service to assist with late payments, because our research is showing that half of businesses, small businesses, are waiting for payments. They're waiting to be paid, and we hear anecdotally that number is increasing. So it's only getting worse. So we're pleased that the prompt payment code was strengthened in 2021, and we're lobbying for more big suppliers and local authorities, public bodies, to sign up to the prompt payment code. So there is that peace of mind there for small businesses. Again, it's not all doom and gloom. We've got the Lower Thames Crossing that has a small business directory. They want to spend £1 in three with small businesses, which is very encouraging, and we're working with them on that. We've got a system now where we've got with procurement levels, that the procurement rules can change. You've got the Preston model, where Preston Council break down their contracts into bite-sized pieces so that the small businesses can compete for them.
Yeah.
So instead of giving the sandwich order to a big company that may not even be anywhere near Preston, they're tendering out for the Lancashire cheese, the tomatoes. So all the local small businesses can go for that. So there's lots that can be done if there's the will for it.
I think that's a really good point. So, businesses that are perhaps, struggling with their customer base at the moment in terms of orders, and perhaps kind of, less order frequency, for example, less volume going through. There will always be kind of new market opportunities, I think, that you can take your business into. And I think that's a really good point. There is more and more commitment at kind of local authority level to spending, more of those pounds, as you say, with small businesses locally. So, if you're not registered on a local authority, purchasing, website, for example, you should be, because then you'll get notifications of, tenders that are being posted, locally to you. So I think that's a really good point. But, just moving on to, what came out of the autumn statement, Tim, last week. Obviously, you know, the tax burden in terms of, you know, on individuals, but also crucially on businesses is going to kind of increase significantly. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a kind of a tapering down, I think it's fair to say, of the, you know, the kind of the energy subsidies that individual households, you know, have obviously been able to kind of access up until March next year. What are the FSB lobbying for in terms of central government for, you know, for example, for an extension of the discounted energy relief scheme, for example, beyond next March? And how important do you see those kind of subsidies and that direct support for small businesses?
Well, we're glad that there was a support package in place.
Mm.
And we lobbied to make sure that it was backdated so more businesses were covered by it. But this toing and froing has not been good for businesses planning. And to see that they want to taper it down, but without giving any specific examples of who they're going to support, they always want to support the worst off without defining who the worst off are, will leave many businesses again questioning what support is there for them. So that's not encouraging. But the tax burden as well will mean that very few businesses can look optimistically at the future. And I can't understand for the life of me, we're in a position of stagflation. Inflation's going up and the economy is not growing. And the only way you get the economy growing is more business activity.
Mm.
The only way you get more business activity is loosening the tax burden so businesses can operate. And there are the incentives there.
Mm.
And at the minute, this autumn budget says, well, if you're productive and if you're doing well, we're going to penalise you. We're going to tax your capital gains. We're going to increase corporation tax, which doesn't do anything but safeguard the Irish economy.
Mm.
And then hidden away in the OBR papers that went along with the autumn statement is a 23% increase in fuel duty next March. So I can't believe that they genuinely think that they're doing good when they are squeezing the income generating part of the economy.
Yeah.
It's only businesses that create the taxes
that
fund the public services. Yeah.
Well, that is the dilemma of having a, you know, what's often referred to as a, you know, a blunt instrument in terms of interest rates, you know, as the kind of the only vehicle really to bring inflation down.
Well, obviously, the Bank of England if the Bank of England said inflation was transitory, right? That's like saying that a fire would just be limited to a certain geographical area, that it won't spread, which is nonsense.
Mm.
If inflation lets rip, it doesn't stop.
Mm.
And they just did nothing.
Mm. Yeah,
so absolutely nothing.
Too late, too little, too late.
Well, no, because then you've got massive, sharp increases in interest rates, which the independence of the Bank of England was designed to prohibit and stop all of this mass increase in interest rates, which would spook the markets and consumers.
I'm just going to bring Graham in again. Graham, what are the kind of the key challenges that your business is facing at the moment? Is it a recruitment challenge, for example? You know, you're kind of predominantly tech based, so I'm assuming you don't have a huge exposure to utility cost increases. You know, you're not hospitality business, for example. What are the kind of the main challenges for you as a very innovative technology driven company to kind of keep on your path to growth at the moment?
Depends what day of the week you ask me, to be honest. Yeah, I think we've got like pros and cons of every business. Like you say, where we are a tech company, I think a lot of this, obviously it does impact us, but it's not at the forefront of, you know, what could basically help us with growth or not. I think recruiting, it's always difficult, but also, actually, I think at the moment, just making sure that your team are getting salaries that they can, obviously, that they can survive and thrive at a time where it's kind of challenging to everyone. So that's so that's kind of a bit different at the moment, and we're trying to do the best we can there to support people.
Mm-hmm.
I think going back to our earlier conversation around, you know, where the world's going, I think the one thing that's really important for any kind of startups is actually some of the financial support. So I look at the EIS and SEIS programs.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're quite lucky here in the UK that we have it. Quite a lot of, I don't know of anywhere else actually in Europe that does.
Yeah, so that's Enterprise Investment Scheme, Seed Enterprise Investment Scheme. So that enables investors to put money into startup businesses and then take that money out again, effectively tax-free at the end of it, yeah?
Yeah, correct, and it's huge. You know, two-thirds of our investments come from angels. Not only the investment's great, actually, some of the angel investors have built great companies themselves. So it's a really great ecosystem to help startups, and it's huge.
The government did mention specifically R&D tax credits last week, didn't they, in terms of trying to reduce, if you like, the number of successful R&D tax credits because they don't feel they're necessarily bona fide, which...
Yeah, that was my other
double-edged sword again, isn't it?
You've read my mind. That was the other point I was going to go on to, And again, it's just, you know, you're investing millions of pounds, some companies a lot more, some companies less, into the technology. And it's a big part of our income line, and obviously it's not as big as percentage wise, it's not as big now, but it still is. And yeah, literally, we had an email from our accountants with a good page around R&D for next year, just to basically say, you know, the changes aren't gonna help you next year, so you need to down forecast any kind of line that you had. Yeah. So again, a huge enabler.
And what a message is that to a company that has incredible growth potential.
Yes.
They say, well, guys, you know what? Don't grow. Mm. Don't employ more people. Don't expand. Economics of the madhouse.
Yeah. So it does seem to me that, we're just going to have to bite the bullet on a lot of this. The government is clearly committed to going down a certain path in terms of balancing the books, with debt and servicing that debt. And ultimately, we're all going to have to suffer the consequences of that in the short term, by the sounds of it. That there are, as we were saying, some incredibly innovative sectors of the economy. And there are, sectors of the economy that are going to struggle more than others. So, that's unfortunately... There doesn't seem to be much of a way out of that at the moment. So we are going to have to, have a kind of a reality check on all of that in the short term, aren't we, by the sounds of it? Gentlemen, it's been fascinating having you on the show today. It's been great to get two very different perspectives in terms of what's going on out there at the moment for businesses. It's great to hear, Tim, that the FSB are fully supportive, as always, of the small business community, and that you will continue to lobby in our best interests. And Graham, of course, we wish you every success in terms of growing your business, over the next 12 months as well, despite all the headwinds that are clearly kind of facing most small business owners at the moment. Thank you to our listeners today for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have your company on a Monday afternoon. As always, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another couple of guests, which will probably be our last show before Christmas. But I think for now, all that remains to do is for all of us to say goodbye. And Tim and Graham, thank you for being with us today. And we'll see you again in 2 weeks' time. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
105.9 Academy FM Folkestone.
BizConnect, the show that promotes and connects businesses.